smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Welcome to Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf, number 5. I'm Fred Green. In our last episode, we began a discussion on hybrids with John K. Solheim, VP of Engineering for Ping. John K. will join us in a moment, but first I'd like to introduce our third for this round today, my regular playing partner on the Golf Smarter podcast, and technical specialist for Edwin Watts Golf, Kenny Nicholson. Hey, Kenny.
Hey, Fred. Good to be here. Thank you very much.
Hey, you know, Kenny, at smarterpodcast.com, we also have another podcast for dog lovers called Good Dog Podcast, and Joanne's producing an episode on hybrids, but it's dog hybrids.
Okay, I'm clueless now. I can tell you all about golf hybrids, but doggy hybrids, I'm out of the picture.
Well, they're generally called mutts. Kenny, before we bring John K. back in, can you please give me an explanation between the difference of a hybrid club and a rescue club?
That's a good question, Fred. Rescue, in a sense, is just a terminology that somebody uses for a hybrid, per se. I mean, TaylorMade calls their club the TaylorMade Rescue, and a lot of other people just call theirs a hybrid. What a hybrid does is it rescues you in a situation where you're basically failing miserably with a long iron. So they just use the word rescue in a sense to create awareness, as a void on the golf course. You know, a lot of people are lost and need rescue on their long iron. So it was a utopia for them was to use that that word and call in their club that.
A brand name?
It is just TaylorMade Rescue. That's what it's called. It's a brand name for them.
And I always thought it was something to help make it easier to get out of the rough.
As far as rescue, that's what it is. But a hybrid is the same thing. A hybrid, you do not get as much of the grass that twists around the hosel of the golf club with a hybrid. It tends to go through the grass a lot easier. And in essence, it rescues you from just being paralyzed in the rough and having to chip out. You're able to hit the ball a lot further. And in most cases, either close to the green or on the green and still able to stop the ball. So no difference between the two.
Oh, well, that clears up a lot. Thank you. All right, well, what we're going to do now is we're going to bring in John K. Solheim, who's the Vice President of Engineering for Ping. And he joined us last time, but we're going to continue the conversation. John K., thanks for joining us again.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
John K., I have to believe when the concept of hybrids were first introduced into your company, there may have been some resistance. They may have said, where are you going with this? This is a whole new concept we've never seen before. What were the thoughts about introducing a hybrid club?
Internally at our company, the biggest debate was, should it be more of an iron or more of a wood? And if you look back at the G2s, we had the G2 HL high launch irons, which were really an iron-type hybrid. They had a real wide sole with a big undercut in the back. As we've kind of done more and more research, just found that the way like our newer hybrids are constructed, it's back basically exactly the same as a fairway wood. So from a manufacturing standpoint, it's pretty much the same process as a fairway wood, just different shape.
And what impact has it had on iron sets?
You know, we definitely don't sell the 3-through wedge like we used to. You know, it used to be the staple. Every order come in 3-through wedge. We started to see a lot of our customers, going 5-through wedge or adding some wedges into that. So they're going, 5-through L wedge, and they're throwing in the sand wedge and L wedge to keep a set of 8 irons. But we've definitely seen a huge decrease in, 2-iron sales. If we look at the number, I don't have it off the top of my head, but in the last year, it's an incredibly small number of 2-irons that actually are being purchased these days. But we see a little bit of erosion of the 3 and 4 iron, which makes sense. If people are out getting fit and going through the process, they're going to realize that there's better options out there through the hybrids and go that direction.
You had mentioned before that you think people with slower swing speeds are the ones who would benefit the greatest from having a hybrid in their bag. I guess for women, it's a great club.
Yeah, definitely is. That's one of the things we do in our women's set. The hybrids actually have more loft than the standard. I remember when I was going around talking to customers, they were like, well, the women don't really like hybrids because they don't have enough loft. They just go with high-lofted fairway woods. And I had to bring to their attention that our hybrids have quite a bit of loft for the women, so they can get that performance, and it just blends right in with the high-lofted fairway woods that they already have in play.
Hmm. Well, Alex Rich of St. Charles, Illinois, writes to us that he's 17 years old, and he already has a 3 and 4 hybrid in his bag, and he's looking at a set of irons and was wondering, for someone like that, a young person who's up-and-coming player, what would you recommend for his next set of irons, and how many, because, these kids have a lot of flexibility and a lot of strength, and they're only getting stronger.
How old did you say he was?
17.
So he's probably hitting the ball pretty far.
And he's probably close to being full-grown at this point, too.
Yeah, I would recommend just going through a fitting and getting, someone who knows what they're doing to fit him and understand his swing characteristics. And he can easily, through demoing some clubs, find out which ones give him the right gaps, because that's really what it's about. It's not about getting a bunch of clubs that you can hit 180 in your bag. You want something that goes 180, 190, 200. So when you're in that position on the golf course, you have the right club for that.
I'd like to give you the opportunity to tell the person who's listening right now why they should buy a Ping hybrid.
Well, it's actually a pretty exciting time. In about 4 days, we've got our annual sales meeting. We're introducing a new line of product, the G10, and we'll have a new line of hybrids. Done a lot of work with these hybrids to improve the CG position, the playing characteristics of them. They've also got a thinner face than what we've done in the past, so we're getting more ball speed. We're getting similar launch conditions. We've actually taken a little bit of loft off of them. But because they have less spin and they launch the ball higher, we're able to keep the same launch angle with less loft, which produces less spin. So we're getting a much more boring ball flight out of our hybrids. One of the issues that some hybrids have, because the CG is so far back, it creates a lot of spin, so you get kind of balls that just want to float on you and not have that boring trajectory. So we're real excited with the G10 and the playing characteristics they have.
Can you explain a little further what you mean by boring trajectory?
Well, just
say it.
Yeah. a lower spin golf ball tends to fly through the air better. It ignores, side winds better if you're hitting it into the wind. Where if you hit, it's easiest to see with a driver. When you hit a drive that has a lot of spin on it, it's really just going to want to lift up in the air on you and then fall out of the sky. By lowering that spin and keeping a high launch angle, the ball is going to just bore through the air better and give you more consistent distances.
How much does shaft play into that, John, with creating? We talk about lower spin rates on drivers a lot. Do hybrids typically fall into that same category as far as matching it with shaft?
Yeah, we kind of see the shaft in our fitting process as like the fine-tuning of the fitting. So the big levers are, let's get the loft right. So we can dial in the loft, a hybrid in particular. That'll help you figure out what distance you're going to hit the clubs by picking the right lofts. And then to kind of make any tweaks to your ball flight, let's look at the shaft flex. And then after the shaft flex, even different shafts that are available within that flex.
It's the engine that drives the machine.
I don't know. I would say the club head plays more of an engine role than the shaft. I would say the shaft is like kind of tuning like the steering wheel on the car or whatever, just getting the feel just right for that individual driver. But really the core of the performance comes from that club head where that CG is. You're going to change spin rates and launch angles a lot more with changes in the head, whether it's the loft angle, whether it's the CG position. That's going to change how the ball flies much more than the shaft change will. Now, the shaft, if you're going from like an L-flex to an extra stiff, you're going to see a big change there. But usually people, they know they're a stiff shaft player, and it's just the different shafts provide a little bit different ball flight for them.
From a life cycle standpoint, when I'm talking about product specific, the life cycles of your products tend to last a lot longer than a lot of other manufacturers out there. For you guys, what goes, because when you come out with a new product line, it's the whole product line. It's not just a new driver here, a new fairway wood here. is typically a whole family of products. How long does it take Ping to typically come up with a new product line? From an engineering standpoint, a lot goes into that. And you guys have been unbelievable about bringing out a whole product line that, that works unbelievable together. So
Really, in the engineering world, we work on minimizing that time because we want to be as flexible as we can. If a new technology comes out, new manufacturing techniques, we want to be able to adopt those to our product line as fast as possible. So not necessarily are we saying we want to introduce products as fast as we can, but we want to be able to take the latest technology and bring it to the market as quickly as we can. So right now we're right at about 9 months from when we say, okay, we need to start working on the next iron to when we're able to, you know, ship it to the public.
Talk to me for a moment about Ping's history of innovation.
Well, I mean, we've contributed quite a bit to the game, we believe. We seem to contribute a lot to the rules of the game as well with the different innovations we've come up with and the different rules that have been generated to kind of curb the, you know, what the innovation has brought to the golfer. But we've got a strong tradition of that, and we try to continue it with each and every product launch we have, whether it's, you know, something back that Carsten did, you know, using investment casting in golf club manufacturing to increase perimeter weighting, raising the MOI. So, you know, we've been looking at MOI for, you know, I forget how many years it's been, 40-some-odd, 50 years now. And today we're still looking at a lot of things. We've got fitting. We see fitting as one of the biggest improvements that golfers can get is going through a proper fitting process and getting clubs that are made for them. So we've tried to bring a lot of innovation to the fitting process to make that more accurate, more timely, so it's not a big ordeal to go through the fitting process and just work better for the golfer so they're satisfied with that process. From a driver standpoint, with the Rapture driver, the G5, and now the G10 driver, we've tried to just stay on top of the industry of having the driver that goes the longest, goes the straightest. And kind of we've got a long history of making forgiving irons, and I don't think anyone's going to be disappointed with the new G10 iron.
Do you think that the history of innovation that you guys have brought upon the industry is a combination of great engineering and creativity, or is it just creativity, or is it just great engineering, or is it blind luck?
Probably a little bit of all three, I would guess. I mean, I'm not going to lie, there's definitely been times when we've kind of stumbled onto an idea. And
do you got any stories? Come on.
Well, I know, like, and this is kind of before my time, but the I-2, the way it had the I shape in the back of the iron, I'm not for certain that, you know, I think that was mainly done for cosmetic reasons, but as we kind of further and further looked at it, we realized that that eye shape was actually supporting the face, making the face a little stiffer so you get more consistent iron shots. So now if you look at our irons of today, they've actually got that rail that goes around the CTP weight, and that rail stiffens the face even more dramatic than the eye shape did. But it was kind of the eye shape that tipped us off that, hey, you know what, it's a good idea to put some structure behind that face so it's consistent, kind of opposite of a driver design where you're trying to get that face to move quite a bit by maintaining durability because you're trying to raise that COR, that initial ball speed coming off your driver. You know, we take the innovation very seriously, and a lot of it, I think, it's having the right people working on these designs, so it's not just about, you know, my dad and me and the two Solheims coming up with ideas. We've got a lot of good engineers that have a lot of good ideas. And then providing them the right tools to, you know, experiment with, as well as the right processes. So there's a method of how we go about creating new golf clubs that's very consistent, easy to follow, and just kind of an enabler to the engineers to build better golf club designs.
Speaking about engineers real quick, do you have certain engineers that work on drivers, certain that work on hybrids and things of that nature, or do they all kind of collaborate together?
They definitely collaborate. We definitely have people who have different specialties in certain areas. So we've got guys who have primarily focused on wedges over the last several years or putters. We've had more rotation amongst the drivers, drivers, fairway woods, and hybrids. Those guys have been working, you know, on one or the other for probably the last four years now. But they're pretty well cross-trained, a lot of communication going back and forth. And, you know, they do. We have a lot of conversations about CG position, MOI, and you know, bounce angle, all that sort of stuff.
Well, you must be awfully proud because the brand itself, Ping, obviously very noticeable and highly recognized. But there's also, you know, a certain, if you carry Pings in your bag, it's like, wow. You know, it's like you've got, you know, you're driving a real nice car there.
Yeah, I mean, we try to maintain that brand prestige just, you know, through the engineering as well as what we do on the marketing and sales side. So that's something we're really proud of, is the brand that we've built up over the years, and we try to do everything we can to maintain that.
John, there's a lot of people out there that play the Ping family of products now that are very happy with them. At what point do you decide as a consumer this product's going to be better than what I have now? Is it just by going and hitting that product, or do you guys look at that from a engineering standpoint and just try to make a product that's so much better than the previous year?
Yeah, I mean, definitely from a engineering standpoint, every product we introduce, it has to be better than the previous one from a performance standpoint. But, you know, we're not trying to tell everybody out there that, you know, when, like, next week when the G10 comes out, everybody who has a G5 needs to go out and buy a new G10. So I just recommend that they take their G5s, or like in your case, take your i3 pluses to the range and grab a demo of the, for you, I'd suggest the new i10 that's coming out. It's going to be very comparable to the i3 plus with some new improvements. And just take that out to the range and hit them side by side and see which one you like better. And if you do feel that, you know what, there's a big enough change that you're going to see strokes come off your game, make that investment, and if not, you know, at least you've gone through the process and seen what's out there, and next time new product comes out, try the same thing again.
Well, good. You've answered a good personal question for me as well.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, you got to try the i10s, because with the i5s, it was probably a little bigger than your i3 plus blades.
Right.
And that's what we found on tour. The guys were coming back saying, you know what, I like the i5s, but they're a little big for me, so with the new i10s, we've actually shrunk them down. So they're, you know, a real blade-type looking club from a dress, but they've got that cavity back, so they still are high MOI forgiving iron. So,
well, that's good. I mean, for me, it's always been more about, you know, not just a new product coming out. I mean, I'm in love with what I have, so in order to replace that, I'm not just going to get a new product because I can say, yeah, I got the new G10 or whatever it is. I definitely want it to be a better club, and it's been so hard for me. I mean, I have stuff that's comparable, but for me, it's all about look. You know, I look down and I see an iron that I've been playing for a long time, and I know I can play it well. You know, am I going to, you know, have a disadvantage by going to something that looks just a little bit different? So,
well, that's the same struggles that I kind of have, because, you know, we're always got new stuff going on here. And when do I say, you know what, let's put it in my bag, or, you know what, I'm playing fine with what I have? Because, you know, it's hard to change. If you're changing golf clubs every 6 months or something, it's just hard to get a sense of consistency and really know what they're going to do for you. So
yeah,
it's definitely a balance that you have to...
It would definitely be difficult for the tour player. I mean, they are switching family of products a lot of times from a marketing standpoint for you guys. So for them, it takes a lot of practice and rounds with those new clubs. So, well, good. Yeah. Well, thanks, John.
No problem.
And, John, there's something I need to know here. So you're a family man. You have children. You work and a major role in a significant company, but you're a single-digit player. How often do you get to play?
Not a whole lot.
I
go in spurts, so I'll play enough every once in a while to keep my handicap low. But I don't play a ton. But different times of the year, I'll play, you know, four or five times in a month, and then I'll go 2 months without playing at all.
I'm sure that you have tour players coming through on a regular basis wanting to try product out, right?
Oh yeah, they're in the range and definitely doing that.
Okay.
So that's more at the range if they're here. You know, at other times we'll send something out to them and just get their feedback through the tour rep. But when they are in town, we try to take advantage of that. We'll get them on our TrackMan and really track the differences from one club to the next. And they like that too, because they can, you know, put two drivers side by side and see exactly what's going on.
But he fits that typical Edwin Watts mold where you only get out there a couple of times a month.
Well,
that,
yeah,
welcome to the golf
business. Who like, you know, is interested in working here or whatever assumes that we're out playing two or three times a week. Not that there aren't a few people that do that, but I'm just not one of them that's out there all the time.
That's the same here, John. The exact same way.
I want to give you an opportunity because you talked about consumers should be fitted for their clubs. And I'd like for you, because Kenny and I seem to do it a lot, but for you to make a plea to explain to the consumer the importance of getting fitted for clubs. Why is it that they don't get fitted for clubs? Why do they just walk into a store, take a couple swings, and say, I'll take it? And why don't they get the fact that they need to be fitted and why they should?
Well, I mean, I guess the why they don't, it's definitely easier just to walk in and see something on the rack, you like the look of it, maybe hit one shot into a net and say, I want it. I think part of the fear is people sometimes don't like hitting golf shots in front of other people. If you're not a very good golfer, you're not, you know, we get a lot of people saying, you know, I'm just not good enough to get fit. And I think they feel because they're not consistent enough, they can't really go through the fitting process and get anything out of it. And really, it couldn't be more opposite than that. And that's what, you know, whenever I'm talking to customers or our accounts, I always say, you know, the single most important, biggest innovation out there where people are going to see the biggest difference is it's not going to be buying the new G10 driver. It's going to be going out and getting fit for a G10 driver and making sure that they've got the right loft, the right shaft. Because if they don't go through that, we can do all the engineering in the world, but if the driver's not fit for them, they're not going to see any benefits to it. But when it is fit for them, you know, we've seen people, you know, especially going from a non-fitted driver, picking up, you know, 20, 25 yards, just going through that fitting process. So it's really worth the time, and maybe there is some, you know, an embarrassment factor that you've got to, you know, hit balls in front of the fitter, and you might not hit all of them good, but it's definitely worth it.
I mean, not being consistent in front of a guy who's fitting you is to your advantage, isn't it?
Yeah, because they can see that, and then they can see your trends of how you miss hit golf shots, and they can take that and apply that to your fitting and give you product that's going to work better for you because you tend to miss the ball to the right. You can do, you know, with our product, the draw option driver in fairway woods. You know, they see you struggling with ground impact, and instead of, you know, going from an I-10 iron, they go to a G-10 iron because it's got that wider sole. It's going to go through the ground better for you. So they definitely learn a lot from watching the miss hits as well.
And Fred, just to let you know, John can touch on this, but a lot of people think custom fit, a lot of times it's going to take them a lot longer to get a product in their hands. That couldn't be further from the truth. If we custom order something from Ping through their custom club department, typically it ships within 48 hours direct to the consumer. He has it in about 5 to 7 working days. So,
yeah, that's our goal. And I mean, that's an innovation that we take pride in. That, you know, it's not really when people think of innovation, they think of, you know, something in the driver design, but the fact that we can take a custom order and deliver it to the customer or ship it out within 48 hours, we see that as very innovative in the marketplace and within the manufacturing world. So, yeah, that's definitely what we try to do. We try not to make it burdensome to go through the fitting process, but to make it, you know, an exciting process. You learn more about your golf equipment in the process, and then, you know, next weekend you're out on the course with those new fitted clubs.
John K. Solheim, VP of Engineering for Ping and grandson of Karsten Solheim, founder of Ping, thanks again for providing your insight. You've done a great job of educating us, and we wish you and your family continued success.
Thank you.
And Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist for Edwin Watts Golf, thank you too.
Thank you.
And now that we've gotten you so excited about putting a hybrid in your bag, we'd like to do just that, because we're giving away the hybrid of your choice. To enter, please go to golfbetterpodcast.com and click on the words Register to Win near the bottom of the page. Deadline for entries will be August 18th, 2007. We'll announce the name of our winner on our next episode, and we invite you to please write a review in iTunes of our program so that other golfers will get a better sense of what this show's about and what you think. And if you have any feedback or suggestions for a topic you'd like us to cover, please send an email to golfbetter@edwinwattsgolf.com.